An upturned arrow shimmers in front of revolving prisms. Title, Amazon Originals. White text on a black background reads, 14% of the United Kingdom is made of people from black and minority ethnic background. African Americans make up 13% of the United States of America.
Rugby is a dangerous sport, but it's a lot harder than American football.
I know it's like a tackling sport, though. That's what I do know. We tackle each other.
I've seen way more people playing it on the park in the last few years. It definitely feels like it's a sport that appeals to everyone.
People on the street interviews. Text reads, the National Football League consists of over 70% African Americans. The Gallagher Rugby Premiership consists of under 10% UK black and minority ethnic. Teams compete on a pitch.
I always feel like sport has a way of bringing people together. It brings people from just different parts of the world.
A montage of slow-motion tackles.
Fortunately, I've had the chance to play rugby, and I personally don't know what my life would be like if I didn't play rugby. It would be vastly different.
That is monstrous!
A highlight reel from league play.
Huge pass, that is sensational! Soltino, the kick across the field, some fabulous handling. Stepping on the gas now, heading for the corner.
A player dives across the goal line with the ball.
To Obano. Obano explodes through that.
Game highlights overlap with the clicking of a slateboard as players sit for interviews.
Into the opposition.
A player makes a last-second pass to a teammate. The opposition tackle him at the goal line.
Anthony Watson.
Fans in the stands cheer while players celebrate on the pitch.
Itoje. Oh, my goodness. Mauro Itoje from nowhere.
Mauro scores, then sits for an interview.
You have to say they thoroughly deserve that.
Can he get there? Heading for the corner.
A team in black scores. A team in red raises a silver cup. Title, Everybody's Game.
But of course we're trying. I don't know that thing around Watson. The club kept going, but of course it's madness.
A montage of players and interviews.
Rugby is not really a thing for Nigerians in general.
Initially, rugby was very alien to me.
From my birth to 11, I had very little interest in rugby, if any interest at all.
I didn't really know how to play rugby for the longest time. Like,
I didn't know the rules, I didn't really know the game.
I was sort of brought into school and told, right, this is what you're gonna have to do because you're a big boy.
When I went to that first school, it was sort of like, give Benno the ball, let Benno go score a try. That was it. That was it from 11 to 16, essentially. I didn't have a clue how to play.
A teenaged Benno plays in a high school rugby match.
I went to my second school and I had to sort of learn how to play rugby there. And I remember when I was 17, it was like, Benz, you're supposed to be the guy, but you know, you don't really know how to play rugby. So I spent that whole summer like watching South Africa, England. I think that was a tour of 2012. I think that's what happened, and it's mad because JJ, like one of my best friends now, that's where he got his debut. And at the time, obviously, I didn't know anything about rugby. I had to learn what was good and what you're supposed to do in rugby.
A player breaks tackles and scores.
It's a little bit weird that like I didn't really know how to play rugby, like the intricacies and the nuances of the game, because essentially that's the part of the game now that I enjoy the most. The tactics and the little bits that people don't really understand, those parts I find the greatest part of the game. And it's weird, at the time, I knew completely nothing about it.
I didn't really have a vision of rugby. Obviously, it was all very new to me, and the school I was in was first and foremost very academic. So the reason why I was there was academic, passing, doing great 11 plus exams, and I was there for studying. So nobody in that school had been an example to go on and play professional in that modern day.
During a break on the pitch, Mauro drinks from a water bottle. Sunlight shines through leaves on a tree. A sign reads, Edgware Town Centre, welcome. A red double-decker bus travels along city streets.
So I was born and raised in North London, grew up in the early parts of my life in Cricklewood, then moved to Edgware in the suburbs of North London.
In a lush green garden, a man sits in a chair. His name appears in white text.
My name is Mauro Itoje, England, Saracens, and British and Irish Lion rugby player.
Oh, I always forget about the Lions.
I had to let them know, innit? I had to let them know. Sometimes they might be sleepy, I had to let them know.
He appears in family photos.
My parents are both Nigerian, proudly Nigerian parents. They have big, big values on respect, culture, discipline, etc., etc. So all of those types of things were instilled onto myself and to my siblings. Our parents gave us everything we needed to do to succeed in life and made sure we were grateful for it.
He grins in a photo of himself as a child.
There was emphasis on, like, being active and living a healthy lifestyle, but in terms of us, the push was for education. It was to do well at school.
Growing up, I was pushed a lot academically. My mum wanted the best for me and my sister. Growing up without a father in the house, the emphasis was on educate yourself, work as hard as you can, and you could do anything.
Another athlete sits for an interview.
Hello, my name's B. Allo. I'm a tight head prop at Wasps RFC. My early life, I was born in Paddington, so I was born in West London. Grew up always in Northwest London with me, my mum and my sister. So moved around from like Kingsbury to Edgware, and yeah, grew up in Edgware.
Traffic travels down a main street.
I used to play football up until I was 11, playing every single day after school, during school, in your lunch breaks, and I sort of really loved it. Played for my primary schools, and then started playing on Saturdays, Sunday league, and then was looking to hopefully take that quite seriously.
Sunlight filters through large trees in a rural setting.
When I went to secondary school, I managed to get into a good grammar school, which was known for playing rugby in the winter and then cricket in the summer. So unfortunately, my football dreams had to stop there.
In another interview.
I was so certain that I was going to be a footballer. And I just used to love football. Like, it was like ridiculous how much I love football. That was really my life.
He sits in front of a wooden pergola.
Yeah, what's going on? I'm Benno Abono, and I'm a rugby player for Bath.
Family photos flash.
When I was really young, I used to write to, like, every football club in London, pretty much. I wrote to Charlton, to Tottenham, to Crystal Palace, to Fulham. Like, just bring me in, like, man can play, just bring me in. None of them replied apart from Fulham, which is, shout Fulham for that. And then I went to a trial after school, actually. I must have been like 8 years old or something, 8, 9 years old. I went to a trial in Brixton at some AstroTurf, and I played a little bit, and I thought I balled out. I thought I really balled out. And next thing I know, there's like a voicemail, like a couple days later, saying, yeah, he just needs to lose a little bit of weight. He's a bit big, like. And that was my football dreams ended right there.
Letters on the side of the building read DHFC.
I played for Dulwich Hamlet, which is a team near me, and had a little Charlton trial later on when I was probably about 13, 14, and that didn't bang either, so it was just tough luck, innit?
Benno stands with his family in a graduation photo.
I was fortunate enough to get sent to like a good Catholic school. My mum's a Catholic, and she really wanted us to go to a Catholic school, so she sent us to a school across the way up in Southwest London. We used to travel ages just to get there. Everyone in the area thought it was a bit weird that they were sending us so far to go to school, but obviously it worked out. The greatest thing that school did for me, although I'm not a big fan of the school, it played rugby, so it basically turned me into a rugby player, which I guess is sort of like a family sport now, you could say, isn't it?
Mauro shares something on his cell phone with Benno.
Benno is my first cousin. He was born 3 days before myself. He's my senior. There's a lot of similarities between myself and Benno, but there are also a lot of differences.
Me and Mauro were brought up in London, I guess, completely different sides of London.
He's from South London, I'm from North London.
Similar household upbringings, a little bit different. in the sense of areas and what we got up to and stuff.
He's short and stocky. I'm tall and handsome. I can play basketball, he can't play basketball. but in all seriousness, we're very close. He's my cousin, but he's also like one of my closest friends.
I was born at King's College Hospital, shout Camboa, and then we lived in Peckham and Southampton Way when we were really young, and then we moved 10 minutes down the road to Lordship Lane, and we just lived off Lordship Lane in East Dulwich, and that's where I grew up.
A cyclist rides past shops on a city street. A beauty salon sits next to a restaurant serving chicken, ribs and burgers. In Benno's interview.
Yeah, I'm like a first-gen Nigerian, I guess. Like, both my parents were born in Nigeria, and they came over here and had me over here, they didn't really follow rugby. Like, they... I think my mums were scared for me to play rugby at the beginning. I had to remind her I'm the biggest man on the field, mum, so it's all right. But yeah, then they've sort of grown to love rugby. And the maddest thing is that, like, now they just love it, like, and they scream as if they know what they're talking about. They have no clue. So, but it's cool now, isn't it? Like, it's what we do.
Goalposts stand in a grassy field. Morrow.
I remember growing up and looking at rugby players, and I didn't necessarily see too many rugby players that looked like me. And I was drawn to the players such as, like, Ugo Monye, Topsy Ojo, who kind of looked like me.
B.
It wasn't anything that I'd seen around me that I could say, right, I want to be like that guy, or I want to be like this guy. It was more like, I enjoy it, so take it day by day, session by session, and what happens, happens.
In amateur video, Mauro takes the top position in a line-out lift.
I probably didn't really think about rugby as a potential career up until the age of 16. From 11 to 16, I was purely playing because it was a cool thing to do, because it was fun, because I was meeting new people, having socialising in different circles. It's probably when I got to the age of 16 where I started to know a few guys in the years ahead of me who were then getting contracts, then becoming professional. It dawned on me that this could be a thing if I dedicate myself to it.
A strong breeze rustles the leaves on trees beyond the goalposts.
I always think that, like, glory is, like, the hardest thing to attain in life. Glory is essentially an honourable achievement. And a lot of people go through life without a real honourable achievement.
In amateur video, Benno drapes his arm around a high school teammate and grins.
That's why I love sport. In glory, because it gives you that chance to achieve glory and achieve something that's very difficult to attain.
Benno poses with his teammates for a photo.
In the US, they use sport a lot to change their current circumstances. They use sport as a currency. Whilst in the UK, we don't do it so much. Well, we do in the sense of football, but in general, we don't. As, like, people from minority, black, backgrounds, we don't usually use sport as a way to change everybody's circumstances around us. And I think we need to use sport more as a means of social mobility.
In a montage, candid video of the players on and off the field.
Back home, so many people work hard, and there's a myth that hard work equals success and wealth. But essentially, you need a plan to work hard in. People aren't aware of the opportunities for them. Therefore, they can't even get a plan to then work hard, if that makes sense. They have to be aware of opportunities in order to take those opportunities, but they don't know about those opportunities. And I feel like rugby is one of those opportunities. And that's why I feel like rugby has a huge image problem.
Tall grass covers an outdoor pitch.
That's why it's important to have people like Genji in the sport in order to change that narrative.
No one knows that rugby is a professional sport where I grew up. Like, fuck, literally no one.
I'm Ellis Genge. I play for Leicester Tigers and England Rugby.
Images of a graffiti-covered building and street signs flash.
So I was born in a place called Norwest in Bristol. I grew up on Andover Road. It's just off the roundabout for anyone who knows it. Yeah, it was a lively neighbourhood. I don't really know how to describe it. You'd have to live there to sort of understand the intricacies of the neighbourhood, but yeah, it was colourful.
In a childhood photo, his father holds him and his sister on his knee.
My dad's white, he loves football. So that was one side of my family. And then on the other side, my mum's a mixed race, very small woman. So it was sort of a mix of backgrounds. You wouldn't traditionally put those two together, especially in the area and the sort of like time period they got together. Yeah, it was a bit weird growing up, a bit confused as to what was going on, especially sort of knocking about the area. We didn't really go out much, me and my sister. We sort of just kicked about in the back garden. I guess mum and dad were worried about what was going to happen if we ventured too far. It's quite a community-driven neighbourhood, though. It wasn't as if, like, we would have got kidnapped or anything, I suspect. But it was more so it's just easier to stay indoors and be safe and stuff.
Travelling through Ellis's neighbourhood, a flag of England flies behind a modest home. Shut up, no matter you, Jim.
it was quite tough. I went to Knoll Park Junior School. There wasn't much minority in our school, a few Asian kids. But yeah, I found myself sort of like telling people that I was white and that I'd just come off holiday with a bit of a tan and stuff because I could get away with it because I'm obviously not that dark skinned. And having a white sister was much easier as well. So it was a bit young to be going on sunbeds though. Obviously some people caught on. Just silly little stuff like people calling me poo boy. There weren't that much hard racism, to be honest. It was more, I guess, just ignorance of being so young and stuff and just teasing. But it's the culture you're brought up with in Knoll. Not many black families and stuff. So, yeah, it was tough at the time, but obviously I look back on it now with a smile and it makes you a bit stronger as a person.
A sign reads, "Welcome to the Memorial Stadium, home of Bristol Rovers FC."
My dad was always football oriented. He used to take me to watch Rovers now and then. And obviously football violence back then was quite prevalent. So I sort of grew up around that. Kept me far, far away from all the fighting and stuff, obviously being like 6, 7 years old. Yeah, all I knew was football, really, up until the age of about 10, I think. Then someone took me to cricket. I fucking hated cricket. I tried boxing, karate, I tried everything, I think, because a lot of sports clubs, a lot of youth centres where I live, so I was never really deprived of sport. It was just more so something I could stick to. And then eventually, yeah, I sort of moulded into loving rugby.
Amateur video with a match plays. A player breaks tackles and moves the ball down the field. A player in a red jersey breaks out of a scrum with the ball and runs. His team executes the same play again later in the match and scores. In B's interview.
I'd describe rugby as a really fun sport, first and foremost. It's fun, it's enjoyable, but it's also very confrontational.
Highlights from professional matches show hard-hitting tackles.
You've obviously got the wider confrontation between your team and another team, and then you've got the individual battles.
Murrow.
Yeah, rugby's an abrasive sport. It's very physical. It's a sport for all shapes and sizes, tall, slim, short and a little bit rounder. Rugby has the place for you.
B.
It's easier than football. You know what I mean? Like, everybody can play. You can get every type of person in football. If me, 90 minutes, finished. You know what I mean? But I can play rugby, so I think it's a lot more relatable sport than people think, than people know.
What made me fall in love with it? I don't know.
Ellis.
That sense of camaraderie and all that, I guess it's quite a team orientated sport, and I don't want to say that just for the clout, because it's not what I'm about. But yeah, I just felt part of something, and it was the first time I really had that feeling.
The fundamental values of rugby is based on respect. Both teams, like, we spend 80 minutes looking to cause damage on one another, but after the game, we shake hands and let bygones be bygones.
Professional teams line up and shake hands on the pitch after matches. Heavy clouds hang over the grassy, overgrown pitch.
Rugby means a lot to me. I don't know whether subconsciously or whatever, because I didn't grow up with a dad. I didn't grow up with a brother. Maybe that's why I love it so much. I just love being around the guys. I love pushing each other. I love the environment that it gives you, even with some of the coaches. I'd imagine that's how a father would be with their son, sort of thing. So I see how they're willing to push, how they show genuine love in the environment, and everybody wants the best out of each other. And then there's the working hard aspect where you go to really dark places with somebody that you see every single day, and then there's the enjoyment. So you're out on nights out, then you're seeing them happy with their families, you're seeing them go through life, and you get to do that together, so you get to experience everything together. And I think that's something that I've cherished a lot from rugby. That's something that I've not got anywhere else.
Bent at the waist, players interlock their heads and form a scrum.
It's quite a macho sport, you can't shy away from it. It's very manly, so to speak, so a lot of the values are how you'd want to carry yourself as a man. So you want to be strong, you want to be caring, you want to be driven.
The players grapple and fight to move the scrum.
I feel like adversity reveals a man's true character. And in sport, you're generally provided with quite a bit of adversity, and in rugby in particular, quite a lot. So I just feel like you grow as a person and as a character when you play sport and you play rugby.
Players compete in a scrimmage on a lawn with half the players wearing red pinnies.
Essentially, you don't know how you're going to respond to a particular challenge until you're immersed in that particular challenge. Because I've seen many people falter when they have been in that challenge, whilst others have gone on to soar.
So that's why you have to be put in those situations to know how you're going to respond.
Mauro plays on a team dressed in black uniforms. In slow motion, they sprint down the field to retrieve the ball.
Whether, like, it's injury, selection, or criticism, or the media, or whatever, I feel like there just comes a point where you have to decide who you're going to be. Everyone always has a perception of who they want to be, but there comes a point where you just have to do it. And that's what happens in rugby, and that's one of the greatest things I think it's done for me.
On a practice field, players interlock and rush a tackling sled.
We live in a more sensitive era, and my generation's a little bit more sensitive due to our parents enabling, sort of epitomised by a cancel culture, which essentially means a lot of people now are a lot more entitled to their feelings. As a result of people being more entitled to their feelings, it puts us in a position where people like to tell you about their feelings. And because of their feelings, they want the world to bend towards them. Whilst in like high stakes performing and high performance environments, that's just not the case. You just have to get it done the way it's done. No one cares about how you feel. And I feel like personally, it develops resilience in an individual.
A team huddles on the field at a practice.
You build mental calluses, and as a result, you become more mentally robust. And that's one of the traits that I think I've developed as my career's gone on.
Dusk falls at a pitch near a residential neighbourhood.
I think rugby, they're happy for you to, in general, express yourself, but within the realms of the team environment. And obviously, if you come from a background that is not similar to the rest, then obviously the way you express yourself can differ slightly. All in all, it's quite accepting, but there are times where it's a little bit tricky.
When you're young, black, and from London, I think, and you talk a little bit different and you listen to a little bit different music, it's like there's often a tendency to see these kids as, like, brash, when that's not the case. It's just that's who they are. Like, if you were to come to their environment, you'd probably be the odd one out. Do you know what I mean? So it's a weird, weird thing that goes on in this environment. Like, no doubt there's a rugby mould, like, of course there is.
A dictionary definition reads, mould, a distinctive and typical style, form or character.
There's always a mould everywhere you go. There's always rules that you've got to abide by, and there's a law in this world, like, it's just the way it is.
I feel like there was definitely a history of you have to be a certain way, straight down the line sort of vibe.
You do feel the pressure to be a certain type of way when you go into these environments.
The factors that people say that you have to be has no direct correlation between rugby. It's just that it's not been seen before. So it's like you're not necessarily strong enough to hold on to your identity when you come into an environment like that. You should be, and I'd love to have been, but naturally you see guys more successful than you, bigger, stronger, richer than you, and you think, I'm not strong enough to just be myself now in this situation.
It's almost like a perception that until you've earned your stripes can you fully relax and be yourself. And I do believe in the idea that you have to earn your stripes, but I don't believe in the idea that you have to be someone you're not.
An athlete in a ball cap sits for an interview.
I'm Anthony Watson, Bath and England rugby player. I'm going to say I'm born in 94. Oh, my God. So I was born in Ashford. My mum's Nigerian, my dad's English. I've got an older brother who was born 3 years before me, and he had lived in Nigeria up until that point. And then after I was born, we moved back to Nigeria. So I lived in a place called Warri in Nigeria till I was about 2 years old, two and a half. And then my little brother was born, and we moved back to England.
Anthony plays in a scrimmage.
I feel like the game still is a bit backwards in terms of perceptions and stuff that they have of people with colour. It's very difficult. It's not an easy situation because, especially for the players who come through of colour, because I feel like there's a level of bias there, or they don't get the benefit of the doubt like players who aren't of colour, you know, with certain attitudes or with the way that they do certain things, and it actually doesn't affect how they play or how they train.
but they're almost on the back foot before they've started because of how they've been perceived.
There's a complex history, but it's all a result of people's bias and the portrayal of the black athlete in the media.
Rows of empty seats in a stadium create a rippled pattern of weathered green plastic.
I think people like us are 100% breaking the mold of the perception of a rugby player. Breaking the mold doesn't necessarily have to be seen as a negative thing. I think it's extremely positive because in the country that we're in and in the world that we're in, there's a lot of people like us. And if they don't see people like them playing professional rugby, achieving to some of the high standards that the boys have achieved, they're going to think that I don't fit there.
I think representation matters, but the lack of representation isn't the main issue. I feel like the main issue is the perception of the sport. The perception of the sport is that it's considered an elitist sport. But it's a weird thing because to start playing rugby at a grassroots level, it's no more expensive than to play football. And it's not a country club like tennis or golf, yet it's considered an elitist sport. And that's generally because it's played in private schools rather than in state schools. So the overall issue is that it's a perception thing, not a cost thing.
Dark clouds hang above goalposts.
I'd probably say rugby does have a bit of a class problem still. The main example I can think of at the moment is the way that Genji answered one of those questions in the Six Nations.
I mean, before you get interviewed, yeah, you'll have, like, your media officer come up to you and say, like, look, you can't say this, you can't do that. We want to talk about this, let's not talk about that. And I'm like, fuck me, do you want to do the interview?
Here's the moment you've been waiting for, Ellis Genge.
Yeah, he's enjoying a beer. It's well-deserved.
He drinks on TV.
You know, he was drinking a beer, which is not out of the ordinary for Genge at all.
I'm having a 330ml beer after a game of rugby. Like, I've just been battered for however long.
People were saying how unprofessional he was in the way that he answered.
I don't know, I can't remember. although it was like 20 minutes ago. It's all a bit of a blur, happens quite quickly, doesn't it?
He was fully just being himself. You know, he spoke exactly how I'd speak normally.
Like, you got a lot of sausages saying things that just come to their head and, like, what are they on about?
I show a little bit of character and I just get slandered for it.
For me, that was just a big, not a wake-up call, but it was like alarm bells in my head were going off. Like, I don't understand how people can have such a problem with him just answering a question how he wanted to answer a question.
I mean, like, we go out and win in Scotland away in the, I was about to swear, sorry, in the rain, and now everyone's singing our praises, whatever, innit? Like, we're on to the next job, and I'm sure we'll have more critics, and, yeah, it was good to get the win. That's all I've got to say, to be honest.
There's a big void in terms of the relationship between the media in this country and the players, and I think that it's like the chicken and the egg, which one's going to come first, because the players aren't going to open up and be themselves around the media and then them go off and write a crazy story about you. And likewise, the media aren't going to be, you know, on board until you give them something to write about.
Rugby has a perception of how you should be and how you act. Certain aspects of personality have to be put to one side and say, not today, like, don't show this part because that's not going to help you progress in your rugby career.
Fans and stuff aren't going to be able to see the true people behind some of their role models. And it's a bit sad, really. The amount of players in rugby that must feel that type of squash, I guess, to fit the mold and not be themselves, you know, it's not easy.
Anthony stares off. B.
Music is huge for me. I'm not making excuses saying, oh, rugby means you can't do music, but your first priority is, I've got to be a good rugby player. You don't think, I can bring that sort of part of me over here. You think, right, I've got to impress these people and I don't want them to think I don't take this thing seriously. So for a long time, I neglected music. I've always been passionate about listening to music, but I neglected my own music.
An internet search for B brings up his artist profile. He records with a piano player.
So I was just nervous. I was like, oh, I'm a rugby player. I'm in the front row. I'm not meant to be this emotional guy talking about how you feel on an instrumental sort of thing. But I definitely feel like it's changing now. And ever since I started to release music, it surprised me how many people have warmed to it. People that I thought were straight down the line rugby players, not much more else about them. They've sent me personal, private messages. They've come up to me like, B, when's the new music? And to me, it's so refreshing. And it's almost like the rugby world was waiting for people to show their personality. It was waiting for people to show themselves, just nobody ever did it. Everybody was just like looking left and right like, are we supposed to do this? It's definitely changing, and it's definitely got to a point where your teammates want to know more about you, and it helps you on the pitch if you know the guy next to you. My music doesn't jeopardize rugby, but I'm trying to grow exponentially in both.
A team pushes across the goal line and scores.
It's that belief in yourself that I always come back to. You've got to believe in yourself and be yourself. Nothing's ever as bad as it seems. You might think the whole world's watching you, judging you, but then you take that step and then you realize that it wasn't how it was. So I think people are starting to realize that you can be yourself and not be a bad rugby player. You can succeed and still have more to you. And I think everybody's warming up to that idea.
The sun rises and crests a hill. In Benno's interview.
The issue with rugby is there's a lack of demand. And we have to ask ourselves, why is there a lack of demand? It doesn't come from the product. The product is good. I feel like the lack of demand comes from people not knowing about the sport, or people from similar communities to myself not knowing about the sport.
Rugby's always been that sort of like a posh sport, and it's only been professional for 20 odd years or so. So it's not really developed that much in that time period. Obviously the money's got bigger, seems the market's got bigger and that, but like the actual brand of people that play it has always been very, very similar.
Ellis and Morrow sit together outside.
I think rugby traditionally has been an elitist sport. If you look at the 90s, it's a sport that mainly public schools played. To get into these public schools, you have to have a little bit of money in your pocket, and that then puts a barrier to a number of different communities, different people from different walks of life, so it's not all-encompassing with that.
It's the way we're pictured in general by the public, I think, is very so much still that chino-wearing shirt and tie wanker sort of setup. Like, well, that's what it's definitely like that in Bristol anyway. I just played for England. I come back off the tour or whatever, and people were like, so what do you do for a job then? And I'm like, oh, I play rugby. And they're like, yeah, but what do you do during the week? I'm like, no, I play rugby. Yeah, you train on the evenings, fucking 7 till 9, but what do you do in the... No, you, that's what you do. Like, it's actually your fucking job.
I think as time has gone on, it has become better, but I think we're still at a period now that the best private schools often have the best rugby teams. And a lot of those players have gone on further to become professional rugby players and England players and so on and so forth. So I do think there is something in it about like breaking down barriers and making rugby increasingly more open to more communities. As I said, I do think we're moving in a positive direction, but I think more can be done to, you know, to make rugby more encompassing for all.
Well, from my friend's point of view, he always says to me, rugby's a bit of a posh sport, isn't it, Al? It's a bit of a posh sport. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it is, but there's posh people are cool, man. Like, some of my best mates are proper posh and well off. Like, it don't make you a bad person.
A building features gables and turrets.
When I was 16, I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship and a bursary to a private school to play rugby at Dulwich College. People talk about private schools negatively, but for me personally, going to Dulwich was like one of the best things that could have happened to me. Like, not only in a rugby sense, but like the people I met while I was at Dulwich. I remember like I'd go back into the barbershop and everyone in the barbershop was happy. The barbershop, my guy Bodai, was always shout and just be like, Imgo that in his accident that be shouting about the school I went to and that. So everyone was just so happy for me where I came from. Like, even my friends, like everyone from the area was just so happy that I could go to that school. So I don't know, like, there are negatives around the private school, but I only had a positive experience. And I'm not trying to say stop it or only, I'm trying to just say don't let rugby only be played at private schools. Let it be played everywhere else as well.
Benno walks with friends around the expansive grounds at Dulwich College.
When I first arrived here, it was sort of like, actually, my first day, do you remember when you helped me out?
Yes.
Bro,
me, you, Mira, you know?
Yeah, bro, many people were helping me. I was like, oh, this is nice.
Oh, that's the level
before
you came in.
I was like, bro, people are nice here, you know? Like, I was like, okay.
Even from, like, years before, like, year eight times, we were hearing about you.
I know, madness here one time.
What did you do? Was it a game?
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah.
After that, people were talking like there was just an animal that was just running through people.
So you're a real player from young?
Right, we're just trying to get it how we live.
The campus features a clock tower.
So what memories did you man have?
I remember initially it being a culture shock. That's one thing that sticks out in my mind.
Exactly. Me and Tej joined at 11 years old, so you can imagine coming from Peckham, Campbell, straight into Dulwich College was mad.
It was a big culture shock, very big culture shock.
You get that a little bit of imposter syndrome because, you know, you look around you and you don't really relate to all the history and all the, you know, middle class.
Well, you're not used to seeing yourself in certain kind of environments.
Exactly.
I sit there with entitled people and I have this conversation that they're like, oh, but like, could people from like your area not go and just do well at school and then get good jobs and work really hard and then have a good job, do you know what I mean? And then have children. It doesn't work like that.
No, that's the reality of
it. Exactly. Like, they don't understand when you're born in like Barnes and your parents went to private school and you go to a private school, you're just following the status quo, big man. You're not doing anything special. You're not changing things. Exactly.
Receiving.
The difficulty level and friction that you're coming across is so much lower.
Exactly, yeah. You know? Like, yeah, you're doing something that other people haven't done before.
Yeah.
And to do that, people don't understand that. Like, they can't fathom it because they're in their bubble of privilege and a lack of understanding.
In Anthony's interview.
Being honest, it took me a while to fully understand or to fully see that there was a problem in rugby in terms of people of colour or the class issue. And it took me to getting to know guys like Benno and Genji and Sink's problems and things that they faced that I hadn't faced because I went to a private school and, you know, was pretty lucky in terms of the way I grew up. Speaking to them, you know, kind of opened my eyes up and made me realise that, you know, some things you kind of do have to take a stand on because it's bigger than just you. That it is important, not just for you, but for people coming through and for the next generation of rugby players to make sure that, you know, some of the things that, not that we went through, because I don't want to make it sound like it was a serious battle or anything, because it wasn't, but for them to not feel constricted and so that they can just, the sport can be more open generally.
Anthony and Benno sit together at a table. In Benno's interview.
Rugby has a privileged history and therefore it's happened to just stay within the communities of privileged people and doesn't really come into communities like mine. But fortunately, I just went to a school that played rugby, so I was able to benefit from the sport and continue to benefit from the sport. But I just feel more people should have that chance, essentially.
The sun rises beyond a rugby pitch.
It is getting better slowly. It's by no means perfect and it's by no means where it should be in this day and age, especially when you look at other sports and stuff like that. But it is improving.
If you look at the 2003 England rugby team, there was one person of colour within that team, which was Jason Robertson, and a fantastic player he was. If you look at the 2020 England rugby team or 2019 England rugby team, it's probably about a third of the team who probably don't fit the description of Anglo-Saxon or Caucasian. And I think it's coming to a stage where rugby is becoming a bit more representative of the society in which England is now today.
I feel rugby as, in its essence, rugby in its simplest form is everybody's game. The way rugby is portrayed means it's not everybody's game, if that makes sense.
I still feel like people can get pushed out of the sport for acting in ways that are not consistent with the rugby, not necessarily the rugby mould, but also the rugby values and stuff. You know, people get pushed out very easily, and once you've got a reputation in the sport, I feel like it follows you everywhere. You know, once you set your stall out, it kind of sticks with you for a long time. It's a tough one because you've got to encourage players to be themselves, but again, you've got to make sure that they're aware of the repercussions of doing things that are not consistent with rugby values or, you know, the culture behind rugby. So, you know, it's not an easy answer, but I do think that there's a lot of players who have been pushed away from the game that could have been excellent in the sport, or guys who are still in the sport but could have been even better. But the reputation that's preceded them from not following rugby norms has led to their downfall type thing.
I think rugby is a game which can be for, in terms of how rugby tries to get across to certain communities, I think can do a much better job. I think we're only scratching the surface in terms of talent, in terms of the communities that rugby can really like get into and make a bigger impact. And I think if rugby does that, then in the long run, it will benefit the whole game, as there'll be better players, more diverse players, players from a whole range of different backgrounds, and be more representative of the Britain in which we live in today.
Players scrimmage on a practice field.
If there's like a more diverse group of people playing rugby union, like, I just struggle to see where the loser is. Like, I can't see who fails in this situation. I feel it's just beneficial for the game and beneficial for the people that play. So I just struggle to see the loser, bro.
The sun climbs above the trees and casts golden rays of sunlight on a rugby pitch. In B's interview.
Everybody is definitely capable of playing rugby, but whether people know they like rugby or not is based on whether they've been exposed to it. Community outreach programs, like just getting into community, even where it might feel uncomfortable, where it might feel like rugby is not wanted, it's just that they don't have it, so it's alien to them. So I feel like into those schools, into state schools in the boroughs.
You tap into a group of players that, you know, potentially hadn't seen rugby as an avenue. By players being themselves and, you know, being open, I guess, to the public, you know, it kind of gives kids from where they're from, who potentially might have had less opportunity, someone to look up to and think, oh, I can do that as well.
Whether there's just one little boy sitting in a flat in North London saying, I want to be a rugby player, but no one looks like me, I could look like that guy, you know what I mean? So whether it's 1, 2, 10,000, we are role models. And whether we believe it or know it or not, there are people looking up to us. There are people saying, oh, that rugby guy, that guy that plays rugby, that's kind of like me. You see, I see it in my posts. People tag their cousins or little, just young black boys playing rugby, and they say, oh, you play like that guy, you play like that guy. And it's refreshing to see, and I just want to encourage that.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I can open up the doors for other people to come in and make a career for out themselves, and if they actually know it's a career by the time I finish playing, I think I'll be happy. But there's still so much more to do, and I think the more we sort of suppress people's personality in rugby and let people carry on the way they're going with just being robots and that real bland sort of way they get interviewed and the way they get like sort of sold to the media, I think it's just not portrayed in the right way for working class people to come in and be a part of it.
There's already situations and examples of taking rugby down to grassroots levels and how people with issues and with anger issues or family struggles, they found solace in rugby, and they've been able to find an output, a nice confrontational output that doesn't get them in jail, that doesn't get them hurt on the streets, that doesn't affect their family sort of thing. It's all purely positive, and you're growing as a person and as a player, and you're getting fitter and healthier, and you're smiling more through rugby. Rugby can be that vehicle to change a lot of people's lives, I think, and just not a lot of people are exposed to it.
Blue sky peeks out from under clouds above a groomed pitch.
I'm not even thinking just in this country, bro. Like, rugby has the potential to be huge.
The potential is, as in, we can't even fathom it because we're not there yet.
This country could be the catalyst for it, because I think in other countries it also has a privileged history in which only privileged people play rugby union.
I think there are plenty, plenty more people who may even be more athletic than me, more gifted than me, who just aren't exposed to the sport. And I think if there was more exposure, I think the results would would go through the roof.
And if you tap into that and other people just play rugby union, like it doesn't pertain to your background, to which sport you play, then we're laughing, bro. We're laughing, like, you can't really know what it's capable of, innit?
I think it will blow everyone's mind that the amount of kids who are driven, who want to drive themselves to a sport, who want to change their lives around, who want to change their families' lives, or even if they just want to make good friends and be good people, it could be a great avenue, it could be a great sport. I think literally the whole country could love it.
Sunlight glistens on a grassy field.
Players continuing to be open and trying to be themselves wherever possible will help. Guys like Genji and Benno and Sink have set out a good start, in my opinion, to encouraging people of different backgrounds to be in themselves and to be in good role models for that.
The more success I've had in the sport, like, it's sort of helped sort of raise awareness. I don't want to sound like a fucking cult hero, but it's sort of helped raise awareness in my area of rugby in general. Like, my friends started following it and they come to games and that. They stand out like a sore thumb in the box at Twickenham, but it's just been good for the area, definitely. Hopefully more to come.
Anthony.
I mean, being honest, first and foremost, you know, I want to be remembered as someone who won things, but I understand and appreciate the importance of being more than just a rugby player.
B.
I'd like to be seen as a player who gave everything he could to the sport, obviously, and was himself alongside. I want to be seen as a good person.
Ellis.
What would I want to be remembered for? I don't know. I guess I'll know when I hang up the boots. I just want people to, I guess in a time in rugby where people aren't always themselves, I guess I just want people to be like, fucking hell, yeah. That was Ellis Genge, like, he was always himself. That was the most raw, organic version of him. And if people think that, then I'll be happy, irrespective of what I achieve in my career.
Benno.
I just want to be remembered as, like, a man of his word. On that note, like, I said I'd be a sick rugby player, so we kind of got to end the interview here, innit? So we've got to get back to work now. But, yeah, I just want to be remembered as a man of my word. Hopefully by the time, in 10 years, 35, when I'm tired, when I call it a day, I'll be happy then, innit?
Morrow.
If in 15, 20 years I'm looking back and I see the next crop of, like, professional rugby players or just people in general, and, you know, they say that I've had an impact on their life to live a certain way or be better, I think that's job done for as far as I'm concerned.
3% of England's 2003 World Cup winning squad came from black or minority ethnic backgrounds. In 2019, England's Rugby World Cup squad had a black or minority ethnic representation of 35%. Benno sits at home with his friends. One of his friends clicks the slate board.
One, two, three. This is, like, one of the biggest lines that I say. I was like, bro, if every man knew how much money we can make from rugby, I think everyone would have taken it that bit more seriously when we played it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you would have gone to those academy days, do you know what I mean? You would have taken it that bit more seriously if you knew that big man like Benz would have his own house right now, you know?
So, no, for real.
In it, that's for what real. I mean, in it. That's just a fact about
there's
it.
There's a number of our characters from our own childhood that we know played rugby that are in compromised positions right now. That didn't have to be there.
And they were cold.
And they were really good.
They were cold. They would have just taken it more seriously if they knew, bruv. And some people might not know, but when everyone's doing something, you just follow. Like, do you know what I mean? If everyone's naturally just doing it, you'll just naturally follow and continue doing it. And then, oh, look, innit? I'm playing rugby. That's basically what happened to me. Like, it's sort of like, I wasn't trying to play rugby. I wasn't trying to be a rugby player. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, here's a contract. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, there's money, like, to play rugby that I was doing for free. Oh, safe, innit? Like, I could do this, you know what I mean? Oh, there's more.
I remember that moment. Yeah. I was having that conversation and you were like, you felt so grateful and lucky to get paid to play this game.
Yeah, bro.
And you couldn't believe it. And I was
honestly,
just there.
Bro, honestly, I'm getting paid to do what I was, what people were paying to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm getting paid to do what people are paying to do.
No, for real.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I'm like, boy, like, how many more people could come and do this, bro? Like, come on, let's bring the whole ends through, bro. Let's bring everyone, come join us, man.
People on the street look into the camera. Benno and his friends walk down a street lined with shops. The camera crew follows them. Behind the scenes footage.
My name is Benno Urbano. I'm a superstar director, producer. Let's do it again.
Title, Everybody's Game. Behind the scenes footage rolls with credits. Describe video by Descriptive Video Works. Benno sits for his interview and looks over a script. Produced and directed by Benno Urbano. Featuring Maro Itoje. B. Allo.
No, I'm not. No.
Ellis Genge. Anthony Watson.
Going up like it is up never. And you can so high, I don't want to get down. Never don't seem like I am Leela. Which one be that? Which kind hammer you want the knock? Which kind rapper no come with bass? Which kind bad girl you come with bra? Just got the money and leave. Set you on fire like thief. Me and you five and
co-producer Jack Tompkins. You can shine your teeth. Anthony smiles and outtakes.
Probably yes is the answer. I've just completely gone in a circle. Oh my god. Takes me ages, bro, I'm telling you.
Additional thanks. Paul Morgan, Oliver Lewis, Johnny Kavanagh, Samuel Tefera, TJ Agbo, Nathaniel Lapido, Matt Ott, Matthew Watkins, Legal and Business Affairs, Jenny Parker and Helena Wilgorska.
Oh, no way. Honestly, that's noise pollution, bro. Like, people have to live, you know.
Additional footage, Ryan Walters, Tom Branston. Archive, Getty Images, BBC Sport, Premiership Rugby. Morrow's brow furrows.
Which low part have I had in my career?
Sound recordists Nikki French, editor Jack Tompkins and David Potter.
I don't know if I've got the answers to... Oh, fuck, what was the question?
Colorist Joe Stab. Online editor Julian Nelson. Post-production supervisor Aoife Delaney. Dubbing mixer Peregrine Andrews.
Because that's the same thing for you.
I'm good to go?
Benno clicks the slate board.
That's a wrap, D.
Executive producers Andy Mundy Castle and Benno Urbano. A Cine Baby, Ben and Jack Studio production. Copyright 2020. Logos, Doc Hearts, Cine Baby Media.